Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pixels. It's a new year. It's a new day. It's a new everything. We're going to have awesome video games this year, just as we did last year. And we're going to talk about both this year and last year. My name is Patrick Beja, and Pixels is a show where we cover the news of the video game industry. Of course, it's been a little bit of a quiet time these past few weeks. We skipped a show. There wasn't a huge amount of news, but we'll cover whatever little amount there was. And then we'll talk about our favorite games of 2016 and then our most anticipated games of 2017. And to help me do that and probably discuss the weather patterns of North America, are Ed Mitchell, who's back with me. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me back.
And Scott Johnson, who is also back again on the show.
So
both of you guys, that was brilliant. Both of you guys have been telling me that you've had snow, which apparently in Florida is going to lead to riots and death.
It's rare, right, Ed? Like, it hardly happens down there.
I mean, it snows a bit, like a little bit every single year, but like it's really bad because in the south it'll rain the day before, the roads will be wet, and then it'll freeze overnight.
And so the cars bump into each other and catch on fire, according to the pictures you sent me.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds like video games are a training regiment for that.
So exactly. here where men and women are tougher in the Salt Lake Valley, we get winter every year and about 2.5 feet of snow last week and no school shut down, no road shut down.
You can plow your snow out of the way. You can't really plow ice, you know?
That's a good point. We end up with icy roads. It gets just as bad. So you're totally right. But man, weird winter for everybody. And the fact that like North Carolina is about to get slammed today is just crazy. So good luck.
It's supposed to start snowing at like 7 o'clock and I have a flight that leaves at 6:45. So I should be fine, right?
Excellent. You know what? This is excellent because what you do when it's snowing and the weather is horrible outside, you stay in and either, you know, drink liquor as they do in Finland or you play video games. Actually, they do both. They're really good at video games. But we will cover the latter. We're not going to cover the different brands of liquor you can stay in and drink. We're going to talk about games that you can stay in and play because this is a show about games and not weather patterns. So let's do that with, first of all, a bunch of little news tidbits, with the first one being Dragon Quest XI has finally been shown a few days ago, a couple of weeks ago, actually, on 3DS and PS4, both versions being incredibly different. 3DS is the more traditional Dragon Quest view, you know, isometric from the top, the pixelated graphics, kind of. It's still 3D, but, you know, it's the 3DS. And PS4... I don't know if you guys watched that trailer, but if you haven't, start watching it now. And it is so beautiful. It is amazing looking. If you like Akira Toriyama's design, especially, this is sort of in that category of Ni no Kuni where you don't think they can make anything more pretty in anime style because anime is relatively simple, but bringing 3D and better 3D into it, I don't know if the game is going to be good. As we know, you know, Dragon Quest is a bigger series in Japan even than Final Fantasy, although by today's standards, it might not be a big achievement. But still, it's a pretty big deal. But the looks of that thing, incredible.
Yeah, I've always been this like weird, like just a few spaces removed from the Dragon Quest series. I just always feel like, oh, that'll be one I'll do. I'll try it this year. Now's the time to do it. I want to kill some slimes or whatever. And I just don't ever get around to it.
But so now is the time to do it, Scott. You know, those Dragon Quest 7 and Dragon Quest 8 just got re-released for the 3DS.
But yeah, they're old school, though.
Yeah, but old school.
Sure.
Should I start somewhere or should I just dive into this new thing?
I think wait for 11 because the problem is 7 and 8 are great games for whenever they were released, which was what, 1992? So, you know, the games have changed since then.
No. 7 came out in 2000.
No, of course. No, I was kidding.
Is like original PlayStation kind of.
Of course. But you know, the funny thing about those dates is that 1992 is closer to 2000 than today is, you know? That's how old 2000 is. So
yeah. I mean, I don't know. It'd be more like going back and playing like Final Fantasy 7 or 8 more than it would be like going all the way back and playing like Final Fantasy 4. You know,
maybe, maybe, yeah. Oh, by the way, the trucks are coming to get you. They're evacuating.
Yeah, I know.
Already. It has started. Maybe you're going to miss your plane after all. Yeah, but yeah, so it looks really great. We're probably going to have a confirmation for the Switch on January 12th. Only a few days until, you know, a week until we get more information on the Switch. And Dragon Quest XI is probably going to be there. But yeah, so there you go. Other impressions on that title?
I don't know what to say. I mean, it's still a JRPG, right? Like I'm gonna go attack a thing and then I'm gonna turn base that thing, right? Is that how that stuff's gonna
probably
go?
Probably, yeah. It looks like it.
All right, it's fine. I'm not a gigantic sort of traditional JRPG player, but occasionally one will find me and I'll go, "Oh, I like this." So maybe this is it. It's beautiful. Mm. I mean, it looks really pretty incredible. I love the style of it.
Mm. Yeah, if you haven't seen that trailer, go and check it out. It is really good looking.
It's like the new Zelda game, except what the cities and stuff would look like in that world. Like, it reminds me of that style. So I'm into that. So, you know, big eyes and anime aside, I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Ed?
Yeah, I mean, I am a huge fan of JRPGs in contrast. So, like, I think this is going to be awesome. I don't know whether I'm going to pick it up for 3DS or PS4 yet. I tend to like playing like JRPGs on my 3DS just because I can bring it like wherever I go, you know? But if it comes out for the Switch, I'll probably get it for that, you know? The best of both worlds, maybe. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see like what if the Switch version is a port of the 3DS version or the PS4 version.
Oh, like, it's going to be PS4, I'm sure. It's not going to be as pretty, probably, but...
Yeah, okay. I mean, it'd probably be
on par. Like, what I'm looking at the trailer again right here, and it'll probably be pretty close to this. Not exactly, but this is a very stylized, you know, they're not going for photorealism here. I feel like the Switch is probably capable.
I think we're underestimating the level of shading and lighting that we're seeing in that trailer. And detail, even polygon detail.
You have to actually look at like the gameplay, like a gameplay trailer to kind of see the difference.
This is in game. This is in game. And I don't think my comment is, I don't think the Switch is going to be able to achieve this level of graphics. If it can do this, I think it's completely upending my estimation of what it's capable. I would be very happy if the Switch can do that level of graphics. I think this is very requires significantly higher computational power than what the Switch is going to be capable of. But
so I played Xenoblade Chronicles on the original Wii, and the world, like as far as scale, is very similar than it is in Dragon Quest XI. So if they like take down the grass quality and things like that I'm seeing in this gameplay trailer right now, we might actually get a pretty good version of the Switch.
Yeah, but that would require, as you're saying, you know, they need to take it down significantly.
Sure. Yeah, it would be like equivalent to having a PC that runs a game on Ultra versus a PC that runs games on like Medium, or you know,
something like that.
Loss.
All right, so that's Dragon Quest XI. Let's move on to by the way, talking about JRPGs, Atlus revealed that they have another RPG, the people who are doing Persona. So they have another one in the works. We don't have any information other than the fact that it's a fantasy RPG. So if you enjoy Persona, the team behind that is doing a fantasy RPG. That's kind of big news for me.
And it won't be out till 2020.
Probably. Did they give the date? No, I don't think so.
No.
Right.
I'm joking. Persona 5 has been so long.
Yeah.
In the tooth.
Mass Effect Andromeda. Ooh. We saw a new trailer. Some people are excited about it. It was in the NVIDIA press conference at CES, which they announced a couple of other things we're going to be talking about in a minute. But release date, March 21st. And there was a gameplay trailer, which was full of action. And that, I have to say, left me kind of wanting. It was kind of exactly Mass Effect, which is great, but probably not what I'm looking for in that game. It's just shooter-ish type of thing, which I don't know. It didn't really excite me all that much for that game. Did you guys? Well,
where were you with the old Mass Effect games? Were you not so much into those?
Well, I kind of want a Mass Effect game that is closer to the first one, in that I want more exploration, more open worldiness, where I can go and do whatever I want in that huge galaxy, or at least, you know, the collection of planets that are there. So what I'm looking for in Mass Effect is not the action parts. And this was just about basically what I'm looking for can't really be showcased all that much in a trailer. So I'm not saying, you know, this means that Mass Effect Andromeda is not going to be for me. What I'm saying is this isn't what I'm looking for in that title.
I guess it depends on, I don't know. I mean, like, Mass Effect fans want that world back. I think they may think what they want is exactly what they loved about the first one, and they may get it and go, oh, well, I wish they would have innovated more and this wasn't exactly like Mass Effect. And maybe that'll be the case, but I just want to get back in that world. I want to be around those aliens. I want to spend time on those space stations. I want to have, you know, missions.
No, I agree. So that trailer was basically just action, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Ed, do you feel like there's a fine line, right? Between fulfilling the fans' wants and needs and innovating in a title that is so firmly set in that world.
I agree with the fact that, like, you go to Mass Effect for that world. And having an action-packed trailer, to me, I look at that and I say, oh, there's that alien that I really like to hear this backstory of. Mm. And so I'm excited to see that alien more than I'm really focusing on this is an action trailer.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, makes sense.
So I think that I would like to see some more of the RPG elements that were in the original Mass Effect, because those basically got stripped out, like you said, Patrick, in 2 and 3. But if we don't get that, I'm just going to be happy to be back in this universe.
Fair enough. NVIDIA also announced an interesting take on their GeForce Now service. Basically, it's the streaming games that they have been using for the Shield service, except you can use it on PCs and Macs. And what happens is that you have, when you log in into the GeForce Now, you have basically all of the game launchers, Steam, of course, Battle.net, Uplay, Origin, etc., etc. You can launch them and play the games that you already own, and it's going to be streamed to you with a pricing model, which is pay as you go. So basically, you get 20 hours of play for $25 for a specific type of hardware. So I think it's a 1060, the type of graphics card you get. So it's okay. You can play several games, but it's not. You're not going to be able to play at super high resolution. And if you want to play on a 1080, it's going to be twice that price. You're going to get 10 hours for those $25. And the reason I think it's really interesting is that I talked about it on a few shows. I've been trying out the Shadow PC system, which is a French company that just launched like a week ago in Early Bird. So it's very early. It's basically a beta, but they are doing the same thing, except they will rent you a remote PC and you can connect to it with ultimately any device, a Mac, a small PC, a phone, a TV, anything. And again, you have a full install of Windows. You don't just have the game launchers, but you have a full install of Windows and you can do whatever you want with it. And what's really surprising with that Shadow PC, if you have a fiber connection, at least you get zero lag. I mean, I tried it with fast games and I couldn't feel the lag. So maybe I'm too slow and I'm old, but still, it means that for most games, it's going to be okay. So the interesting thing here is NVIDIA coming in with a pay-as-you-go model, which is relatively expensive, I think. And the Shadow PC thing, you get a 1070 graphics card and you pay $30 a month. It's 30 euros if you commit for a year. So I'm curious if you guys think this is something that you would be interested in. And if it is, would you be wanting to pay as you go or maybe rent it for the, you know, pay the subscription for the month and then you're good?
I'm not in the least bit interested in this. And I think it's kind of weird. They even say it here. Basically, a GeForce gaming PC on demand is how they're describing this. It's for people that don't have access to a gaming PC, don't have the inclination to build one, and those who game infrequently. That is not me in any of those three categories. So I'm probably just the wrong target audience. However, what does make sense to me is it's not gone well for their gaming on demand streaming service. They haven't, blown everybody out of the gate. They are not leading in that area at all. They lag significantly behind other competing opportunities for people to stream games. This is different in that, you can play all the games you already own and blah, blah, blah. All those things are true and interesting. But they are definitely, I guess, serving a part of the market that they don't currently sell video cards to. And so that makes sense, I guess, from a, let's try to cover more bases as a way to expand our business. But what they would really like is everybody to buy GeForce cards and build PCs with their expensive cards. So it's a kind of a weird, it's almost like it's a weird countermeasure, or it seems kind of polar opposite to their core business. But I guess it's not. I mean, again, it's chasing a market that isn't me. I don't find any of this appealing, and the idea of renting a PC to play games is just goofy to me. I don't know why. Maybe this is the whole new thing where, everything in the future is going to be this. It's all Ubers and
Netflixes and Spotify's and
we're all going to be paying rentals on everything. And then this makes even
benefit for society is that you manage to, first of all, you're probably going to be paying a little bit less if you do that, but also you get all of your resources centralized and shared, and so it's better for everything. You consume less, you recycle, you use the thing more, etc., etc. I have thoughts as well, but Ed, what do you think?
Yeah, it just seems like I don't really trust in a PC that's on some network somewhere streaming a game to me. I don't think PlayStation Now works as well as it promised originally. And so, I feel like having a 1080 in a machine that's, far away is, doesn't really have the benefit that having a 1080, obviously, in your machine right here just because of, lag and stuff like that. It's like Scott said, it doesn't appeal to me because I already have...
It's not your thing.
I already build PCs myself, so I don't really see the need to jump on this. But maybe for someone who... let's say my fiance wants to get into playing a game or whatever, and she wants to have her own Steam account and stuff like that. $25 for 20 hours of play, that's a decent chunk of time to dive into a game, and it's relatively cheap. It just sucks that you have to own the game as well,
Yeah, so addressing your first concern, I wouldn't have believed that it actually worked until I tried it myself. And the Shadow PC thing, at least, again, I'm perceiving no lag. It's like unbelievable. Literally,
so were you playing games on the Shadow PC?
Yeah, I played Overwatch for an hour. Okay. And I swear to you, again, maybe I have a little bit, you know, slower reflexes than a crazy 14-year-old. But
did you try playing
Widowmaker? And, no.
Because you need a little bit more twitch to play a snipe.
But I'm really bad at Widowmaker anyway. but I mean, you know, the fact that I couldn't tell the difference, I swear to you, I couldn't tell the difference between that and my local machine. So that, and maybe, you know, maybe Overwatch has a lot of lag compensation, but the lag between you and the device, the remote device, is not compensated by the game. So anyway, I am now convinced that at least in my setup, it works, period. It doesn't work maybe. It doesn't work if you have this or that. It works. I can't tell the difference. I'm sort of taking this problem differently from you guys. It's kind of course, if I have a PC, I don't care because I already have it here. But maybe if I have this service, I don't need a PC. Right. And I can play it from anywhere decently, anywhere I have a good connection, of course. And I can get for that amount, I always will get the 1070 of the year. Next year, I'm going to get the 1170, the year after that, the 1270, et cetera, et cetera. So
right.
I might be paying ultimately over 3 years the price I would pay a full PC, but I'm always going to have it up to date. So that's kind of and if that's the case, I think for me, it's not, you know, now, I think I'm going to keep my PC for at least the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, but maybe down the line, I could see that happening. And even if it's only for gaming, I would much rather have a machine where I can play as much as I want rather than one where, you know, I have to pay again every 20 hours or even less, to re-up the thing. But maybe if you're an occasional gamer, you know, you don't really care about all of this. You just want to play a couple of hours a week, right, on the weekends.
Maybe at that point it feels like you're going to an internet cafe in Hong Kong or something where...
Or like, I was thinking like when you're traveling, like if you're not in like hotel crappy Wi-Fi or something like that, like when I go home... Like there were times years ago when I used to raid pretty heavily where I'd have to bring my desktop home, you know, and put it in the car and bring it down the stairs and up the stairs of my house and then set it all up. If this works, like you say it does, I could see myself paying a $25 fee so I could raid on my laptop rather than having to lug my gigantic desktop home.
Exactly.
That's actually a good point. I didn't think about it that way, but that's actually pretty useful.
The problem is the use case you're talking about, while totally attractive, and I agree, is that we're not there yet with the technology. In other words, there's no way that you're going to be able to have reliable travel internet that is to the level needed to make this a low latency experience.
Yeah, no, I mean, I could see myself like, tanking a boss and needing to hit a cooldown or something like that, and then just not going through, and then I die, and then raid wipes or whatever. It's just like,
so that's true. I think many games don't require that level of latency. You know, there are many, especially single player games. Maybe you're not going to need to be that fast. And the other thing is, if you only have a Mac, for example, you can play all the PC games you want with just your Mac. Mm-hmm. I think there are use cases that are going to become apparent once these services are available, and that maybe we're not thinking about now because we're just thinking, well, I have my PC. Why do I need something else?
Yeah, like there are Mac gamers, for example, specifically Blizzard gamers who love Blizzard games and have always loved the fact that Blizzard has been very generous about Mac support, and they didn't do that with Overwatch, and they have shown signs of doing that. And because of that, they felt like they really got left out in the cold. This is definitely sort of a workaround for that, for sure.
Yeah, and
an extra $25 per 20 hours of Overwatch. It seems expensive.
So is it? I don't know if this was said in the announcement or not, but is it $25 like you get a slot of 20 hours, or is it like 25 after you pay the $25 you get 20 like 20 consecutive hours after that, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think the. It's not specified yet. The service is going to be launching in the spring, probably in the US only at first, I would imagine. So I don't know that it doesn't make much of a difference. I guess you get credit, and then depending on the machine, quote unquote, you use, you, you get.
Well, no, it does. Like, if you don't have 20 solid hours of play in a row, $25 wouldn't go as far as having like a set amount of time. So I imagine it's like a set amount of time.
It's
you know,
to be like a tank of gas.
It has. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it'd be silly if it wasn't. And I'm just gonna say one final thing about this. This is just my prediction, Patrick. We can revisit this in a year when I come back on the show, and we'll talk about it. I predict this will fail, and the reason I say that is they're terrible at everything but their core business. They have just been bad at it. All of their separate devices, their initiatives with the Shield TV thing, it's pretty abysmal. Their portable Shield thing, pretty abysmal. Their tablet, all kinds of problems out of the gate, battery issues. Not at one time the most powerful tablet you could buy, but one of the least sold tablets you could buy. I don't think they're good at this other stuff, and I don't know why, and maybe this will change, but I feel like every time I hear about some new initiative from NVIDIA, I go, just make really good video cards for now, or hire somebody who really knows how to expand, because it just never goes.
I'm just not sure the money's there. You know, I'm not sure if enough people are going to pay to keep the costs of running these servers, you know?
So I think on the commercial aspect of it, there's a really important distinction we have to make with the other services, which is the problem with the other services is that they, from the get-go, try to get a commercial offering that is appealing. And they have to license, it's basically a Netflix for video games, and they have to license the games that no publisher wants to license. You're never going to get the big games and the recent games. Yeah. The advantage with this is that you're playing the games you already own. So it's the first time you're going to be able to play the latest games there are in the world with a service like this. And again, people are going to say, oh, but then it means I have to pay for them on top of it, and I have a computer, and it's more money that goes out. But if it does work, then you don't need a fancy computer. You can have a smaller one. And it's just a different, it's again, this technology, being refined. And I'm not, you know, I don't know that it's going to work out next year, especially. I think it's way too early, but I do think that ultimately, somewhere down the line, there's going to be a place for that kind of service, and it's going to have, you know, some success somewhere.
One day it's going to be all we do. Like I am 100% agreement with this one day being the way that we consume this kinds of content. I mean, there was that many years ago, we were all scoffing at the idea of what's the idea of Steam meant in the PC gaming culture, and it just seemed the stupidest thing. And now we embrace it as the platform. So I'm not naive to that, but also, you know, knowing all the technological hurdles that still exist that have, they have no control over, that's just going to be a while. But when it happens, it'll definitely happen. I mean, I don't buy discs.
So it's just
anymore.
A question of timing. So
that used to sound crazy to say I'd never buy a disc again, but that was in the day when the best bandwidth you could get was about a meg and a half up, down. And that was, you know, that was seen crazy high at the time, but that still wasn't good enough for a 20 gigabyte game. Like those have all changed. Like all that stuff tends to change, but I think we're like, you know, 5-10 years off on this being something that's viable.
Yeah, so we'll see. You might be right. We'll see. They're also enabling the GeForce, the Shadow software, you know, which allows you to stream to everything on your GeForce graphics card. They're connecting it with Facebook Live, which Blizzard did this a few months ago. They're doing it now. I think Facebook Live is going to be, if I had a prediction for next year, I'm not sure, but I'm wondering if Facebook Live isn't going to become a more prominent player in the game streaming game in 2017 and going forward. Because, seems they have.
Yeah, it's possible. They have, I mean, you know, there's no bigger audience than the Facebook audience.
And it's just so easy. I mean, you're connecting from, I mean, it's the case for Twitch as well, but I don't know. It feels easier for some reason on Facebook. Everyone's already there. But
yeah, there's a lot of people there. I mean, I can do Twitch people would argue with you day and night, but I think
I understand the value of community and compartmentalization, and YouTube didn't manage to take that, you know, from Twitch, even though already every gamer is on YouTube anyway. But yeah, I don't know.
I'll say this about Facebook streaming. It's already like it's part of OBS now. So OBS can stream directly to Facebook. No problem. What you're just going to see is a lot of what's the word, entrenchment. And also, by the way, you're seeing Twitch respond to this potential. You're seeing them go, ooh, we need to open it up. So now they're back to letting anybody on with whatever categories. Mm-hmm. It's not just gaming. And also they're going to do mobile streaming stuff very soon in 2017. So they're responding to that looming, not threat, but that looming competition from the likes of Facebook. So I think it's wise for people to take that seriously. That includes Twitch, because they cannot sit on the laurels of a bunch of angry gamers for the entirety of their company forever.
Talking about angry gamers, none in sight when we saw the new comic for Overwatch, which revealed that the game's main character, the mascot, if you will, is gay. Tracer is a lesbian, as revealed by that latest comic, as I said. And I think what... I don't know if I'm hanging out in the cool places of the internet, but I didn't see anyone being angry, which I think is more of an event. You know, we're barely 2 years after Gamergate, which exploded the entire internet, and a major character in a major game is gay, and basically no one cared. Everyone was like, yeah, cool. All right. The game is still cool.
I don't know if that's exactly true, but I'm going to tell you, because I had some weird feedback, but I'm going to say this. I think I have a theory as to why, and then I'm very curious about Ed's take on this. So here's my theory. If you'll go back with me a ways back in the history of Overwatch, there was a pretty big controversy dealing with Tracer once again, and one of her victory poses, which everybody thought was sexist and showing her butt and whatever. Now, when that happened, there was a big contingent of angry gamers who flipped out on social media and otherwise, Reddit, whatever, about don't change it just because there's a few, you know, precious snowflakes that don't want to be offended. Be true to your vision and let her be who she's going to be. And that was like the big outcry, right? Now it's that same group who, in theory, should be all worked up and pissed that Tracer's gay. And they've gone suspiciously, not entirely, but suspiciously for the most part, kind of quiet on this one. And I think it's because it makes them look like giant hypocrites to say that on the one case, you know, we don't want her to be, or we want her to stay sexy. Keep that sweet butt. That's awesome. Oh, she's gay. She shouldn't be gay. Don't follow your vision of what the character should be. Like, it's directly hypocritical and very hard to defend. So I think that's why it was quieter. That's just my take.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the forums kind of blew up in response to it, with both like positive feedback and negative feedback, which is, I think, you're going to find with anything. I just think that since this was so like huge for Blizzard to kind of like put it like in the forefront of it, people have a bigger reaction to it. I just don't care. Like, yeah, it's cool. Tracer's gay. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know,
and play more video games, you know,
plus it's their character. They get to choose what they want to choose. So their argument that was true when she was sexy as a heterosexual, freaking boy dream for them. It's the same thing now. It's just that
people
now
they don't have any fight. There are people that are freaking out that the new Oasis map is like not true to actual Iraq or whatever. And it's like, this is like near future. I just think people are getting worked up over nothing.
I think there are always going to be people who get worked up over nothing. And certainly, I mean, we've seen a couple of threads of people saying, oh, Tracer's gay, give me my money back, I don't want the game anymore, which obviously there are going to be people like that everywhere. But the interesting thing is that when Gamergate happened a couple of years ago, one of the arguments was, if we start seeing these things being forced into games, then it's going to change games and it's going to make them, you know, lose what they had. And games are going to be worse for it because they're going to be artificial. And I honestly think that Tracer would probably not have been gay, and Overwatch probably would have not been as inclusive as it is today, if Gamergate hasn't happened and if the spotlight hadn't been put on that issue of the industry, which is diversity. And what we're seeing is that it can be diverse, sort of, you know, semi-forcefully, if it's integrated well into the intent of the game, then the game is still going to be great. And sure. It's sort of proving the people who were calling doom about the forced inclusiveness of games and saying that it was going to worsen the quality of the games, it's proving them wrong. So, and I think people, a lot of, you know...
I want to go devil's advocate for you on you just for a tiny second, because I believe you're right. 100%, by the way. I totally agree with you. But I want to say that there is going to be a contingent. Okay, let's say that this news was that the reason Soldier 76 and Reaper are so upset at each other is because they're gay lovers and they used to be, and now they're so separated because
that's
of the
what
thing.
I was going to go to afterwards. Yeah, but
let's say that's the news, or that Winston's gay or something. Like he's still mourning Harambe's death or whatever, right? Like something like that's going on. If that was the case, I guarantee the backlash would have been bigger. Now, why is that? Well, the dark answer is dudes are kind of into gay chicks. Lesbians are hot, man. So part of me is concerned that that's why there's less stuff. There's some people going, all right, yeah, all right, okay. Well, who's she gonna who's she getting with? This matches with my Google image search. Porn parody Overwatch future that I'm interested in. So
people were upset that Widowmaker wasn't her, you know, play friend.
Her lover. But,
you know, I think there are going to be people who are going to be upset anyway all the time again, but there were a lot of people who were kind of swept up by the Gamergate movement, sort of thinking, yeah, it's going to make games worse and special snowflakes, but which I understand, you know, we're too sensitive nowadays, that philosophy, which I understand. But a lot of those people are sort of got back down from their high horse and they're thinking now, all right, maybe I made more of a big deal about this than it needed to be, and they're being a little bit more reasonable. Where I kind of agree with you is... specifically in that comic, the way it was revealed was Tracer being kissed by her girlfriend. I think if it had been a male character that had been shown as gay, it would have been much more of an uproar. I think we're not quite ready for that yet. As you were saying, it's funny because it's the exact example I took on Overwatchers. I was saying, you know, if Soldier 76 and Reaper were getting it on, that would have been a much bigger deal. And I agree. I think if a man, if it had been a man who was gay, it would have been a much bigger. I don't know that it would have exploded everything on the planet, but it would have been less accepted, let's say. So, but you know, small steps.
Yeah, small. Yeah, that is the positive spin on this. Mm-hmm. The small steps, everybody. Also, who cares? Like the same way I feel about finding out actual people I know are gay. Like I find out some famous actor's gay, I'm like, all right,
you know,
why are we talking about it? That's their life. That's their personal predilections. It's nothing to do with me.
We could discuss this for a long time and why some people disagree. But, you know, it's yeah. Anyway, so the cool part of it, I think, is that it was, even if you think there was some noise made about it, I think there was less noise than you would have expected, right? So
the bigger deal is that Winston made it possible for her to hang out in her apartment without her freaking chest monster thing on her. Like that to me is the big innovation here.
The chronal accelerator works by proximity. She doesn't necessarily need to wear it. Awesome. Yeah, I know.
Just imagine the inconvenience. You're just at the local yogurt shop, just like, God damn it, this thing's in the way again. I'm dropping food on it. There's crumbs in it. Like, I'm telling you, that's the big deal we should be talking about.
Well, you know what? Maybe Harambe can do something about the Nintendo Switch, because apparently we have rumors that it runs 40% slower when it's undocked. It's not quite, you know, there's no hardware in the dock, but it does probably serve the purpose of making the device display 1080p when it would display 720p when it's undocked. It would make sense. That's a theory that a lot of people have been talking about for the past few months. And it seems that what we're seeing leaked would confirm that characteristic. Anyway, next week we're gonna know a lot more about it. It's finally unveiled. But
do you think that the dock like allows for greater power consumption, and that's why it's able to run faster?
Yeah, of course, that's the whole thing.
Like battery.
Yeah, you know? when you're running on battery, you don't want to have a lot of consumption. So you want to save the battery, and that's why you make the clock speed of your GPU or CPU or you know APU slower. But when you're on the dock, obviously you have the power direct to the socket, and so you can overclock it as much as you want, and that's gonna run better. So makes complete sense.
Sure.
And finally, we didn't get a chance to talk about Super Mario Run because we haven't made an episode since then, I believe. So very quickly, what did you guys think about the game? Did you pay for it? Did you regret it? Ed, you go first. If you bought it, maybe you don't have an iPhone.
Yeah, no, I have it.
Excellent.
I think it's way cooler than I expected it to be. Mm-hmm. I haven't actually like done the actual purchase yet. Because I was trying to get as much out of the trial levels as possible, which is to say, I have a problem.
So you got all the coins and everything.
Yeah, that's my problem. I cannot control myself. If I could control myself, I'd say, oh, I can get all the red coins and then move on to the next level. But no, I have to do the same mission over and over again until I completely complete it. And so I haven't bought it yet, but I think I'm going to. I think I'm going to, and I'm going to go ahead and play all the missions. Because once you kind of get into the swing of things, I understand like how it controls and stuff like that, which is very different, obviously, than when you're on like a 3DS or whatever. But once you get it kind of under control, it plays smooth as butter and it's fun.
Yeah, I like it. I paid $10 for it. That seems silly cheap in terms of knowing I was getting a form of some sort of Nintendo product. My only real complaint is not the gameplay. I think it's fine. The adaptation to the phone, the focus on what you're actually doing and how you need to collect those coins, I think is perfect for the platform. Like the actual gameplay, no problems, no issues. My problem is just under the surface of it all, there are indications anyway that this looked very much like a free-to-play product at some point and they shifted gears.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean, there's places where you're like, well, this normally would have some way to like boost it with gems or buy some kind of something. And so why keep all of that infrastructure in there if it's not truly a free-to-play experience with microtransactions to augment the game? I'm not actually asking for that. I don't want that. I do want a $10 premium experience. But I just feel like there's stuff under the hood where they switched gears midway or during the process went, you know what, guys, maybe this bad strategy, like marketing guys got involved or something. And that just makes me feel a little weird. But other than that, I think it's a fine experience. I don't think it's, you know, people saying it's not a great Nintendo game. I don't know. I mean, what do we expect from a mobile, essentially a take on the runner genre? It's not perfect. It's not going to be Mario 3D World 2 by any stretch, but it's pretty good for what it is. I mean, I find myself really enjoying it, and having all the sights and sounds of real Mario assets doesn't hurt. So it's
fine. As someone who's about to get on a plane, I'm really upset that I can't play it on a plane.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
I use it in the subway all the time in Paris. And
Yeah.
Very often you lose connection and it kind of doesn't work, which is again a bummer. I was really disappointed about that. I think $10 is definitely the Nintendo premium. If it was anyone else, it would be less than 10, but there are apparently rumors that it's making more than, so it was downloaded 40 million times, over 40 million times in the first 4 days of availability, which is the record, all-time record, and it converted over 3% of the download. So the way we know this is a firm studied this. You know, they do this through credit cards. They have a sample of credit cards and etc. And they can map that with the downloads. And they said about 3%. Apple came out and said this is inaccurate. It's not the right data, and the real number is actually higher, which I was surprised they mentioned the number is higher. I would have supposed they would have said this is an accurate period. So that's probably a good chunk of cash. I don't know if they were expecting more, but it's nothing to scoff at. I like the game as well. And again, I don't think I'm not sure it's worth $10. I think it's, if you're into Nintendo, maybe you don't mind the $10, and but if you're not, wait for it to be on sale before you purchase. So
too late. I already bought it.
Oh well, there you go. You're gonna be traveling now, right? You're gonna be going to your folks. So you know when you're not driving, you can play it a little bit. Exactly. All right, and that's about it for the news items we had over the past few weeks that I wanted to mention. There are a bunch more, but I don't think it's necessarily worth going over everything, unless you like crappy sequels to Double Dragon, which are just as bad as the first one, which I know this is blasphemy to some people, but I mean, I would hope I would get a sequel to Double Dragon that is modernized, just not just basically the same one. But anyway, that's a different story. Landmark also has shut down the spin-off from EverQuest Next. That's kind of a bummer as well. It's, you know, EverQuest has been the breakout MMO before World of Warcraft, but I remember when they announced EverQuest Next and Landmark, it was like, that's like a fantasy that you can't realize into a game. It's someone's brain musings. It's not a game, and I'm sad they couldn't actually do it. But I remember we were at Gamescom when they announced it, and we were announcing, I was working for Blizzard at the time, and we were announcing Pandaria, I think, or around that mm-hmm. period. And EverQuest Next was like, I want them to do good things because I have a spot in my heart for EverQuest, but I don't see that becoming, you know, all of the intelligent world that creates monsters where you like it felt more like a nerd's AI fantasy than a game, kind of, you know. It's and I don't want it to sound disparaging, but
anyway. No, I had a friend that messaged me when that was like announced however many years ago, and he's like, this looks really cool, and I was like, yeah, it looks really cool, it's not gonna happen though.
Yeah, didn't seem like they had the, I don't know, the energy for it. Well, clearly they didn't, because they didn't do it. I mean, it didn't work out, and it is frustrating and too bad. I've always looked at EverQuest as like the Diamond Rio before the iPod came out. Mm-hmm. It's like it's just such a drastic seismic shift when WoW just clobbered MMOs forever, it turns out. Or at least, you know, nobody's been able to quite crack that egg for, you know, on 12, 13 years now. So I wish that wasn't true. I wish the old guard could step up and suddenly blow everybody's mind, and it just doesn't happen. And as much as I love Blizzard and I love World of Warcraft, I wish it was easier for others to do things in the MMO market that really make a difference. The problem is, I think most of that quote unquote market has resigned themselves to saying, well, all right, so WoW's we're no longer chasing it. What we're chasing now is free to play or niche audience or whatever it is they can gather and get.
Yeah.
It's a shame though, because I really like the systems of MMOs, like the character creation, the talent trees and stuff like that, and kind of the group aspect of it. And it's a shame that it's just not happening outside of WoW, really.
Right.
I mean, there are some, it's just they're not, like the big thing the industry is focused towards now. But the thing I think that exemplifies the most what I believe went wrong with EverQuest Next is kind of summed up in an experience I had in EverQuest, the original one, back, you know, in what was it, 99 or 2000, was the fact that I got, maybe it's even going back to before that, to Ultima Online, the fact that you could actually kill someone and steal their stuff. And the thing is, it's sort of a exciting thing because it models real world. And as Dungeons and Dragons nerds, we have that fantasy of sort of playing something that feels real. And if you want to go out and steal someone's stuff, then you can. And we sort of want to translate that into a game. The problem is, it's a fun concept of the mind, but it doesn't make for good gameplay. And that's the issue I had with EverQuest Next, because in your mind, it's great that you're going to be able to steal someone's stuff and tough luck. You know, they got by someone better than them. But in reality, you're just, you lose the stuff you wanted to keep and it feels bad. And in EverQuest Next, it's not exactly the same thing, but there's kind of the same philosophy of let's make something that is a recreation of a version of fantastic fantasy reality. When I think what is more productive for a game to be focusing on is good gameplay, not reproducing some theoretical fantasy world exactly one-to-one. So
not only that, but it's the part of the problem, I think, what happened certainly with WoW's dominance was everybody went, okay, now the standard is cooldowns and hotkeys the way they work in WoW, and it's WASD and mouse control, and like they had to adhere to so many conventions. They at least they felt like they did, that really weren't exactly there with EverQuest or anything that came before it. So what you ended up with was kind of a Call of Duty problem, except I don't think it benefits it in the same way, because you have these enormous costs and time that have to go into making something as big as an quote unquote MMO that you don't with a shooter with a familiar control scheme. And that kind of stuff is just so hard to get over. Like, it's now the standard, and the standard is being held by the standard bearer, which is Blizzard. And so anything else just feels like a weird half step, even though they may spend equal amounts of money, talent, and time on it. It's just it's really one of the weirder psychological.
It's also like things. Players' times, your time that a player can spend in your game. That's also a resource that you have to kind of keep in mind, right? So like with a shooter, like your example, someone can go buy the new shooter next week and spend like however many hours playing that, but it's definitely less than the time investment to actually like get all the way up and going in an MMO, you know? So like I played the Old Republic and WoW at the same time.
Wow, that is courageous.
There was a time when that was something I had time for, but now you're
nettled and you have a job.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just started coming to the point where I was just like, I might as well just play WoW instead. I'm already established in this game, so I don't know if I have the energy to get established in two games, you know?
Well, anyway, so that turned into a conversation about MMOs, which was expected. But talking about great games, let's move on to the favorite games of 2016 segment of the show. As I said, we're done with the news segment. We're going to talk about our favorite games and then about the most anticipated games of 2017. And let's start with, I see there's a lot of intersection between our games here, but let's start with Scott. Which games are your favorite ones for the year?
Well, it's an interesting mix. I have so many that I could mention that left an impact on me, both large and small, especially a lot of indie titles this year. So rather than do that, I'll tell you the ones that made the biggest hole in my heart in a good way. And surprisingly, there's three shooters on this list. Did not expect that in 2016.
Who would have thought, you know, last year that shooters would have been some of the favorite ones?
Yeah, I usually am, you know, I'm into shooters, have been my whole life, played Doom and Quake and everything beyond. I mean, I love them, but I just didn't expect them to be so prominent for me. So my game of the year is Overwatch overall. I love that game, everything about it. I want to play it all the time. I played the hell out of that beta. And I kept playing and retail, and I played the other day, and I got the Yeti last second before the end of the thing finally, and I was so thrilled, and I didn't spend a dime, which was great. Anyway, I love Overwatch, and nobody should be shocked. But others that really jumped out at me were Doom. That's the best single-player campaign, period, this year. I loved every second of it. That exceeded every expectation I had for what a Doom.
It exceeded everyone's, I think.
Yeah, it's insane what they pulled off.
People were really worried about like, oh, it's not going to be like old school Doom where you had like secrets and cool stuff to kind of discover in these levels, and it was just going to be a generic like run and gun shooter. But it ended up not being that at all. It ended up doing exactly what people wanted, which was have a nice shooter that feels well in a new age like shooter world, but also allow you to explore these levels, unlock these secrets, and it pretty much did everything that both sides of the Doom camp wanted.
It also immediately knew what it wanted to be out of the game.
Absolutely.
When you went up to that door and you cocked that gun after putting on the Doom suit that was for some reason surrounded in candles and satanic symbols, and then you cock your gun and walk outside for the first time, you go, all right, it's on. Like, it's on.
Yeah,
and what a wonderful freaking game! Oh my gosh,
yeah, it was awesome.
What really got me in Doom when I understood what the game was when they were trying to give you instructions on the little screen, telling you, you know, you have to do this and you have to do that. And the Doom guy punches the screen, rips it from it, from the machine, and throws it away. And you're like, oh, okay, I see how this is going to work, right?
Yeah,
it's
so meta.
Like, it's the game designers telling you, this game is about shooting stuff, and we're going to teach you through mechanics how to do the thing. And the first, like, two-thirds is throwing more and more demons at you, and then you go in hell, and you have, like, arenas where you have to just you think you're never going to be able to beat that giant demon that they throw at you, and you finally kill him, and 3 rooms later, you have 3 of them jumping at you, and you're like, and I can do it, because you learned how to deal with those things. And the fast FPS thing, it's not a modern FPS. It's, I mean, now with Overwatch and everything, we're sort of going back to it, but we had been into Call of Duty for so long, we had forgotten the Dooms and Quakes and all of this, and Unreal and all of those. And it was, to your point that we didn't know what it was going to be, the press didn't get advanced copies. It was one of the first times we didn't. And we were certain it was going to tank, especially since the multiplayer was the only thing that was accessible in the beta, in the open beta or closed beta, whatever, before launch. And it wasn't good. So the single player campaign came out of nowhere, and I loved it. It's one of my favorite games of the year, obviously. It's amazing. If you haven't played it yet, go right now.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, and it's awesome. and I'm more impressed by the fact that in the games world is so unforgiving about historical stuff. They look at this as one of the great moments, titular moments of all video games is Doom, the original Doom, and so much came in its wake, and you know, id Software established so much. And that's true. It's a tall order. Even id couldn't reproduce that with Doom 3. Doom 3 was a, you know, okay game, but it wasn't Doom.
It was more of a horror Doom than Doom.
Yeah, they were trying to say, well, we're in a different era now. We should make a modern game, shouldn't we? That's different than what Doom was. These guys just went, you know what? We should fight every tendency we have to try to make this what we think people want, and instead make it what Doom should be. And I don't know how you get to that. I don't know how hard that must have been. But they nailed it, and it's to be commended up and down the wall. It's amazing what they pulled off.
And one last thing I'll add. Sorry, just one very quick last thing. They also added that glory kill and murder. What's the other one? You know, there's a chainsaw and the melee attacks. And the fact that those are the things that give you health and ammo is a stroke of genius. I think this is one of the things, like the Batman combat system, which is one of the most original and impactful elements of game design that we've seen this year. And you know, the Batman thing back in the day, it's from a game design standpoint, wonderful in what it means for the philosophy of the game. You have to be in the thick of the action, and if you're you're in trouble, then you're not gonna go hide. You're gonna go in the middle of the demon hellfest that it is and punch some demons in the face, and that's awesome.
And it's more than that too. Like people were worried that was gonna like slow down the gameplay, and it doesn't at all.
No. I want to go
still
and play
like
it again
constantly
now.
Moving and constantly going, and it's crazy. It's awesome.
It would drive you. It would be terrible if it didn't. If they weren't pooping out that stuff, you would never do them anymore. You would just say, oh, well, forget it. That's fun for the first few, but then now I've seen it, I don't care anymore. But in a lot of ways, they basically created, like in Diablo, barrels and piles of dirt and a dead soldier.
Right.
The reason you click them isn't because it's fun or because it's continually fun. You click them because there's gold or possibly a legendary going to poop out of there. And it's just the same concept. Our brains respond to, I need to open this to get a thing. And we are opening monsters in Doom to get something. Great. It's a stroke of genius. I totally agree. Yeah. Titanfall 2 is also on my list. Easily the second best campaign I played this year. I'm not even quite done with it. I started a little late, but
have you done the time mechanic level? I guess
I have the one with the portal. That stuff's amazing.
Really clever,
I keep hearing about toward the. I keep hearing at
don't,
the end.
Don't spoil. I haven't finished it either.
But. Okay. Yeah. There's some amazing thing at the end. And I haven't gotten there either. But anyway, Titanfall 2 is pretty incredible and way underlooked, I think, this year. Well, not really. Critics love it.
The funny thing about Titanfall 2 is that everyone says it's an awesome game and it's too bad that it didn't sell well. But it's really a factor, you know, a consequence of the fact that there were so many awesome games. It's really just that, right? Yeah. And the competition with Battlefield 1. But
somebody has to
talk about that a couple episodes ago. Yeah. Just the placement of it in the year just did not do itself any favors.
No, it didn't. I mean, there's other factors at play. EA really didn't get behind it in a way that I think would have helped them. This is it's silly how much they did get behind it for its Xbox exclusive release for the first game that didn't have a campaign, that was just a multiplayer experience essentially, and then did nothing really to promote it this time. I'd be seriously bummed if I was those Respawn guys. I think this is some of the best work of the year, and it's being overlooked by too many players. But critics like it. I loved it. I'm loving it. I need to finish it. And then just a few other mentions. Hitman is still, I'm still going through it, but good Lord, Hitman's good.
That's interesting. I never thought you were into Hitman.
So good. I mean, I'm not traditionally that much into Hitman. I was more of a, I don't know, Sam Fisher kind of guy. But Hitman has always been interesting. I like the idea of stealth assassination in creative ways, whatever. But this is another company where I felt like they went, all right, well, we've gotten too far from our formula. In recent years, the Hitman games have been kind of tankers. And why? Well, we're trying to do things that aren't in the best interests of what we've established with Hitman. This game takes it back to what Hitman should have always stayed. It is more like Blood Money, if people need a point of reference, if you've played Blood Money.
Yeah.
It's everyone scoffed at the idea of it being episodic and coming out in chunks. Turns out that was the best thing ever. And it made it kind of perfect. It's really great. It's the funnest murder sandbox ever, maybe.
I think it's like I'm talking about Dishonored in a second, but in Dishonored you can choose like the stealthy approach or the like kill everyone approach kind of stuff, or even like when you have your target you can choose to save them or do something that's non-lethal in the lethal thing. But with Hitman, with Dishonored there's only like two choices, it feels like. With Hitman I feel like there's like so many choices and stuff on how to approach a level, and I think that's the replayability of the levels.
Yeah, and it's also just this their elusive targets thing they do where well, for Christmas only there's this dude you can go try to assassinate on a map that you already have, and like that stuff's really brilliant. It makes the world feel alive and like I want to keep returning to it, but also it's like here is a space, now figure it out. And here are all the tools that you can use, and you start getting real creative and
like listen to people what they say like on the side, so you can kind of get an idea about some of like this guy only drinks. It's almost like in Game of Thrones, this person only drinks this particular like cup of liquor or whatever, so you can poison that and just get him or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's really brilliant. It's super good, and if you have played it, people out there should really consider at least getting the first episode and seeing what you think. And then I got the entire set for like on sale for
it was like, $15 on sale for Black Friday.
Yeah, the whole season. Ridiculous. Yeah. And it was just a no-brainer and worth way more. I feel like I ripped them off. And then finally, two mentions I just want to make because I love them so much. Steam World Heist, which was a multi-platform game. The Steam World game, the one previous to this was called Steam World Dig. It's a completely different game.
Yeah,
but it's set in the same universe. It's like a Western cowboy space thing. Heist is amazing. It's I don't know what to compare it to. Imagine XCOM mixed with like a loot based system of getting loot.
It's like side scrolling XCOM.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. It is so good. I don't know that anything had me more. How do I put this? Like, I was concerned about it when I first got it because I thought this looks a little goofy. I don't know. Maybe this is a little low rent. It's not. It's awesome. This story even is great. The writing's really good. The settings are great. The gameplay is nonstop awesome. Throw a little worms in there in terms of like aiming your gun and bouncing it off walls.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's so good. SteamWorld Heist. It's maybe runner up for my game of the year. I love that.
It's on 3DS too. The PS4 version is the port from the 3DS version. So if you want to play it on the go or whatever, you can do that too.
Yeah, I have it on Steam. I have it on iOS. Plays great on an iPad Pro, by the way. That's a really great.
Oh, that's what I thought.
iOS. That's cool.
It's from December 2015. It's not from this year.
But it got ported this year.
Oh, okay. So for the
okay. Yeah. All right. So maybe it doesn't count. Well, that's what
it's fine. It's fine.
So good. All right. Here's a game I know came out for sure. It's on mobile. It's called Crashlands. I won't spend too much time talking about it because people can go research it themselves. But it's essentially imagine these like Don't Starve style survival games, except you don't have to worry about having too much inventory or swapping that stuff around. You don't have to worry about what tool is in your hand at any given time. And it's funny as hell, and cross-platform, and cloud saves. And
can I play it on the plane?
You can play it on the plane. Yes. You can connect. You can download your cloud saves as local saves. Play anywhere you want offline. You can sync those later. Play it on the PC. Go back to your iPhone. Go back to your iPad. Go back to your Android device. Play it again on your PC. Like, it's awesome. I love Crashlands, and people should be playing Crashlands, and it's cheap, nice. And they play Crashlands. So there you go.
Cool. All right, that's a bunch of stuff.
I feel like that was a long time, sorry.
Well, we had to chime in for a few of them, and we didn't talk too much about Overwatch, which I have a suspicion might be on some other people's list. Ed, what are your games of the year?
Is anyone shocked that Overwatch is my game of the year? we're like right in the middle of recording our top five, or top tens, rather, for Four Player Network. And one of the things that I say about Overwatch is like, it's just fun. It's just good old fashioned fun, and the stories and the work that Blizzard's doing like outside of the game to kind of tell their story. It's not unique because League of Legends does it too and stuff like that. But it's just cool, and the animated shorts are awesome. It's just the whole package that Overwatch is what I think raises above for me. I don't know.
I'll have if a little bit more to. Well, okay, I can talk about
just
it now.
Just go for it, Patrick.
Yeah, so for me, Overwatch has been kind of a revelation. It's been what has brought me into the competitive FPS world, what has taught me what's fun about that world and what's enjoyable in the best way possible. And I didn't think it was going to be that much of a big deal for me. I've been playing it. We talked about it a little bit on the instance the other week, but I've been playing it every day almost, certainly every week. And if you're listening to Overwatchers, a show I do about Overwatch with Garrett and Chris, my struggles in competitive mode have been one of the most game-wise, impactful thing for me this year, definitely. It's kind of my Dark Souls-like trial, you know? it was something that was really difficult for me to tackle, but which I'm finding rewarding in ways I didn't expect once I have tackled it. It was difficult because it was the first time I was confronted to real competitive tilt. Like, I was getting really angry in a way, you know, I'm a very calm person, but I actually got angry like uncharacteristically. It was like difficult to control physically. It would do something to me that I wasn't used to, and so I had to learn to master those emotions, which are, in the case of a game, it's kind of, I don't know, I think people dismiss it a little bit more than if it was for sports. I'm sure, and you know, I don't play sports at any, I don't play much sports, and certainly not at a competitive level. So I have never had an opportunity to sort of explore what that struggle of one has to win, one has to lose, does to you, and what it does to your determination, what it does to your, what you do once you're faced with that. You can, especially in team games, you can blame your team, you can try to improve, you can, keep at it, you can give up because it's just not for you, don't have time for that kind of crap in your life. Overall, Overwatch has made me experience all of this while still having mostly fun. And I'm sort of talking about the last maybe few months of the year for me, but also throughout the year, I found the fun in all of the different characters, the deep gameplay elements in each different characters, the lore, which is really interesting, and the kind of thing that I would use to get into about things like Street Fighter or, you know, fighting games that have an ensemble character. But it's not as dumb, because in Street Fighter, it's always, you know, done as an afterthought, and it's really silly, like in Tekken. Best case scenario, it's fun. But in this one, it's kind of a little bit deeper. So everything about and, you know, of course, my attachment to Blizzard as a company, showing that they can, again, as we talked about on the instance, showing that they can have a massive success with an old game like World of Warcraft with Legion, and still have a massive success with a completely new game and new IP with Overwatch, was kind of heartwarming, because it's nice, you know, to be rooting for the people who end up winning. And again, as I often say, Overwatch was not pegged for a winner in the beginning. You know, it was an FPS. Blizzard has no business doing an FPS, and it's kind of a copy of TF2, and it's kind of a MOBA, but not really. What is this mishmash of lots of different things, and it's too easy to get into? But in the end, everyone, you know, discovered the joy of the game. So it's for many different reasons, for me, it's obviously my favorite game of the year, and I think a success, an objective success for the company and for the industry.
It's impossible to see it in any other light. It is absolutely a runaway freaking success.
My thing about it is, I feel like I haven't played a like you said, Patrick, a competitive multiplayer shooter since probably Halo 2. You know, that's a long time ago. And I love the feeling that I'm getting from this game, where I'm constantly improving. And that's something, like, when I play competitive Rocket League and I play on matchmaking there, I feel like I am not constantly improving in that game. I am as good as I'm ever going to be, and I'm not going to get any better. But in Overwatch, I feel like I am consistently getting better, and I'm able, and that's the other thing, like, you can play any of these huge slot of characters and always be getting better at each one of those. Last night I played Zenyatta, and I got the most kills on my team, whether that's because my team sucked or I was really good, I don't really know, but I was sitting on the point as Zenyatta is very weak. I was sitting on the point as Zenyatta and just, like, totally throttling everyone who came at me. And it's just like that kind of stuff, it's satisfying to do that, you know.
I think there is a level of fulfillment when you play the game and you manage to do stuff, and there's not all the time, but there's usually a point in the game when you're going to feel you're going to manage to do something successfully, no matter what level you are. You know, maybe if you're a bronze level, you're going to get an ultimate that kills two people or three, and you're going to feel good about that. If you're a higher level, you're going to do a team stuff, or you're going to go seek out and flank and get a healer, whatever. But there are always moments that make you that little adrenaline rush or some dopamine or something that makes you feel good. Scott, are you playing competitive at all, or not?
I haven't so much this season. I've been really heavily involved in Heroes of the Storm recently.
Right. Which you didn't mention. I guess it's not from this year, but.
Well, it's not from this year, and it should get an honorable mention. If I'm talking pure hours, between, if I had to add them all up, I'll bet Heroes has more hours than anything else I played this year. I love that game a lot. And, but as a result, I have been focusing, I kind of like, I'll switch back and forth in terms of which competitive season I'm into. So I'll go all out in Hero League one quarter or whatever, and then I'll go all out in Overwatch the next. Of course, we've only had a couple in Overwatch, so it's not quite the same, but, placement matches, sure, I'm in there, but mostly when I'm in there, it's quick matches or checking out what the brawls are going to be, or, you know, trying to knock out some games with friends or whatever. The biggest change that I love about that game more most recently is them moving Be Anybody You Want, as many as you want, over to the sort of arcade portion of the game, and keeping quick match, or putting quick match in a place that is a slightly better place to be now.
Closer to the mechanics you get in ranked games, so it's less goofy.
Less goofy. They really did need that tier, because I'm all for the goofy. They need that too. I think the game's great for having the goofy, but now they've got these great distinct places for the game to be. They've got the goofy, and the goofy is better than ever with multiple.
Oh my gosh, that arcade is so awesome.
It's so much fun. I love it. The events are great. All that stuff is great.
Crazy.
And then you move up to the middle tier, which is now a really solid place, a quick play. It's a great place to be.
Yeah.
And play competitively, and you don't feel like it's just a joke when everyone goes, you know, Hanzo or whatever. And then you jump over to competitive, and you've got your true, you know, pedal to the metal sort of competitive mode. I think it's been the healthiest place it's been, and I can't stop playing it. Oh, but nerf Symmetra. Thank you.
Yeah, that's going to come at some point, I hope. But
I got destroyed by a Symmetra last night. That was crazy.
It happens. So if you want to follow the next step in the trials and tribulations of Patrick in competitive Overwatch, you'll have to listen to the next Overwatchers podcast. I'll have stuff to say. It's been an interesting trip, and it's not over yet. But yeah, your other games, Ed.
Yeah, sure. I mentioned it just a second ago, but Dishonored 2, it's awesome. I talked about it the last time I was on here, but it's more the same Dishonored 1, but better in every single way. Mm-hmm. The missions are fun. The story is interesting. The new powers are crazy cool. So it's kind of like Mass Effect, like we mentioned earlier. I just wanted another game to get back into that world, and that's what I got. So I was very happy with it. Mm-hmm. Haven't mentioned it yet, but Uncharted 4, I think, was obviously a runaway success. You have down there at the bottom that Uncharted 4 just moved almost 9 million units, 8.7 million units. That's crazy. The game is fun, and then the moments with Nate's brother are endearing, and it's just... It's everything that I expected out of Uncharted, and I think the shooting's better than the other games, which is quite the feat, and it's just cool. It's awesome. I don't know if you guys have anything to say.
Yeah, just quickly, I think the game itself was a little bit disappointing for me. Certainly the most beautiful game I've ever played.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
but it was a little bit disappointing. I think the ending, though, saved it.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what put it... really in a place where
I mentioned it in my top 10, but man, the ending, I had a smile on my face the entire time. And
exactly.
as someone who's like about to get married and stuff like that, I hope that I can have that kind of relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Two more.
Legion. Let's talk about Legion real quick. I was really nervous going into this next expansion. You know, my raiding guild fell apart a couple years ago, right towards the tail end of Black Rock Foundry in Warlords, and I didn't raid at all, really, in Hellfire Citadel. So I was really worried that this was going to be the kind of end cap to my 11-year WoW playing experience. But it wasn't. They knocked everything out of the park. I'm able to play casually and do like world quests and have plenty of content to do every single day, and still be able to do dungeons and mythic dungeons. Mythic plus dungeons are crazy. It's just they managed to keep the crack flowing, and I'm really happy for it. I think, you know, and the rating is cool. I don't do it as much as I used to, obviously, but they continue to be awesome about the rating, and the story. They took their story seriously. This expansion, I think, mm-hmm. and I think the quality of the storytelling and the what's going to happen in 7.2 and beyond and stuff like that. I think it shows that they are serious about telling the story that they want to tell. And Warlords was literally just there to get Gul'dan back, and that's all they really cared about there.
Yeah, it feels like you know. Back on form is an understatement.
Absolutely.
It seems so committed and so wanted to give us you know, the best possible rebound from Warlords, and it stands today as my, you know, it's right up there with Lich King as my favorite content of the game.
We want class specific quests. We want class specific quests, and they're like, we'll give you class specific storylines in an order hall that's all for your entire class. And it's like they're like we want more daily quests, we want more more story and stuff like that. And they're like, we're everything you're asking for. We hear you. How about we turn it up like 4 points up, and then you can get that instead. And everyone's just like, yay!
Yeah, really. Yeah. And again, I keep referencing the episode of The Instance we did last week about 2016, but it also means so much for the company that they have now proven that I think there's no more discussing what World of Warcraft does or doesn't do. One expansion might be better, one expansion might be worse, but overall, there's always a chance for an expansion to come out and be excellent in every way possible and bring back people who might not have been playing before. Maybe it's not going to be the next one, maybe not the one after that, but it's just a service now that just runs. So,
yeah.
Anyway, and
last one, The Witness. I completed The Witness, like, all the way through, like, did everything. That game is awesome. It teaches you how to play it a little bit at a time. It gives you little bite-sized pieces to learn how these mechanics work. And we might talk about it in a little bit. They kind of teach you mechanics by, like, kind of observing what happens in the background in a way. But The Witness teaches you the mechanics by you actually doing them, like, every single time. Every single mechanic you want to learn, you do it. And the way he designed these puzzles so that they the way he designed these puzzles so that they kind of interact with the world around them is something that is really unique in the kind of first-person puzzler genre. And the ending to that quote-unquote ending to that game where you get that last achievement, it's called Challenge. I have never felt more frantic in a first-person puzzler than I have in that version of the game, because you, like, you're timed, and the whole time it's playing that the song. It's I'm sorry, but the do 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 do, like that song, you know. It's playing that song the entire time you're trying to solve these series of puzzles. That if the song ends, then it resets, you know. So just that song and going through the puzzles, and it plays the entire song, which is pretty long, so you understand, like, and I didn't get to the end a couple times, so just it just felt awesome to be able to do that part of the game, you know.
It's one of the games I was really excited about, and just so many things that I didn't take the time to even, I don't have it. I'm gonna add it to my wish list. That with Hitman, I'm going to add them to my wish list. But all right,
game. When I look at The Witness, I always think, "Oh, I should play that," and then I think, "I don't know if I have enough freaking brain left to play that."
Yeah, but that's...
it's definitely taxing on the brain cells, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can't.
I do have it. What the hell?
You already have it and you haven't played it?
I have it. I haven't even launched it.
Oh my gosh.
The greatest puzzle of them all was Patrick had it the whole time.
Well, I'm going to have to play it.
It's cool. There are parts of that game that, like, you go up to a puzzle and you're like, I have no idea how I'm supposed to solve this. And you go, like, further down the line to the first one and you're like, okay, I kind of get it. And that satisfaction of, like, constantly unlocking, it's almost like you're building new paths in your brain in a way to kind of figure out how to play it. And it's just cool. It's awesome.
All right, well, I'll have to play it at some point along with the other 15 games from this year. I mean,
yeah,
honestly, I don't think there's ever been a year, I think we sort of said that last year, but there's ever been a year that was so full of excellent games I want to play, but I just don't have time because there are more excellent games that I want to play too. But we've been saying that for the past few weeks, and maybe 2017 will be the same. My favorite games are Doom, Overwatch, which I've talked about extensively, and Inside, which I've talked about. I found it maybe a month before the end of the year, and I've talked about it recently on the show, but boy, is that game, like, everything. It's an indie game, very much an indie game. And I'm so happy these games can exist and can be successful in today's panorama of the industry. Everything from, you know, it's simple puzzle games. It's simple puzzles, so it's not too challenging. But the art of it, the emotions that go, that they make you feel through that game, are some of the best I've seen in many years in any game. So again, I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but yeah, Ed,
it's crazy the array of emotions that you get. It's like all up and down the spectrum, from what is going on to, oh my god, I'm terrified right now. There's actually a clip of me playing that game where the little shadow thing comes at you, and I actually like scream and squeal a little bit from being scared, and just being like, it's awesome. It's like I said, it teaches you how to play as you're playing it, and yeah, it's crazy. Mm.
I don't know what's happening near your house, but if that beeping is happening,
they're built. They have a little crane. It's a little crane thing that every time they move it, it beeps, which is obviously very irritating. So I keep trying to mute my mic so you don't hear it too much. But
it's okay. All right, so let's move on to the most anticipated games of 2017. And once again, Scott, what are your games of 2017?
For me, it's simple. Three. There's three, and they're the only three I care about. Red Dead 2 is easily and by far and far and away the one game I want the most. Mm-hmm. That was my game of the generation for the 360 PS3 era. And if it's the fact that there has never been a port to the PC, is this seriously one of the saddest conditions of my life?
Crime.
I'd pay full price for it tomorrow if they released it. I absolutely would. I love Red Dead so much. So that's an easy pick. Mass Effect Andromeda is a big deal for me. And Zelda, those are the three that I'm most looking forward to. Here's what I know. 2017, like all years, will be full of weird, out-of-nowhere indie things on Steam and stuff that I love, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And they're going to come out nowhere. I'm not going to expect them, and they're going to smack me in the face and change my world. So I'm looking forward to that also, but that's less of a game and more of a lifestyle.
You know, Red Dead, it's interesting because I'm really wondering if it's going to be anything other than Red Dead 1. And if that's the case, it's going to be good. Everyone's going to play it. But I don't know. I mean, it's in my list as well. Obviously, it's on the top of my list even. But I only recently started taking a step back from the excitement of the announcement and thinking, wait a second, what are we hoping for here? What is it we hope we're going to get? And I think what we're going to get is Red Dead in a more pretty version. And I don't know if an old game prettier is going to be enough. You know, it might be kind of like Uncharted 3, you know, or maybe even Uncharted 4, which was cool, but it wasn't like, it didn't make my list, for example, Uncharted 4.
Right.
Mass Effect, yeah. Zelda, I think you're going to be disappointed, Scott. I think we're all going to be disappointed.
No, don't say that, please.
You're an insane person. You're an insane
person. Don't say that.
That game's going to be great. It's going to be a Switch seller. It is going to be incredible. I think you're nuts. You've eaten too much cheese and wine.
There was a recent report from the same person that has been doing all the kind of leaks that she was wrong, and Zelda might actually come out day and date with Switch.
Yeah, I've seen that. I think it's the localization that's not available. So either Europe doesn't get it at the same time, or we get it in English, and then there's going to be languages, you know, that are added via downloads or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that would be great. I just think the game is going to be... You need to be wearing serious Nintendo goggles to expect that much. Well, not to expect, but to look at what's been shown and think this is awesome. Maybe it's going to be in the end because it's Zelda, but anyway. All right. And Mass Effect, we've already talked about a little bit. Ed, what are your most anticipated games?
I'll go down the list real quick. There's a lot here. We talked about Zelda already. Halo Wars 2. The first Halo Wars was a surprise for a console RTS, and it actually was pretty good. And the cinematics in that game, I go back and watch them all the time. So if Blur is doing the cinematics for Halo Wars 2 again, so that's if those are there, then that's really all that really matters to me. Red Dead Redemption 2, we already talked about that. Mass Effect Andromeda. Gravity Rush 2. Gravity Rush is this little kind of indie level game, like weird Japanese game that came out on the Vita, and it was ported to PS4, and the Gravity Rush 2 is coming to PS4. It's fun. It controls like a dream, and it controls weird, different than like anything else that anything else really does. And it's just cool. Horizon Zero Dawn looks awesome, and I'm looking forward to another game where you can shoot a bow.
that's soon, right? When is it coming out?
It's February, in a few weeks, February. Right? Yeah, I think it's late February, like 21st or something like that. It's
28th. So the end of February.
It's gonna be awesome. Then Neo, which is a kind of Souls-like samurai game. So it's just kind of the same kind of feel as Dark Souls or Bloodborne or whatever. But you play as a samurai instead. So that's awesome.
All right. Yeah, there are some games. I'm surprised. I think that the one that surprises me the most is Halo Wars 2, because I never got into Halo Wars. I'm not a big Halo fan. I sort of missed that. But the fact that it's an RTS at a time when RTSs are not the most popular genre, it's I don't know. I think I'm a little bit more intrigued because of that.
I think it actually sold decently well.
Yeah,
the first one did. So I think Microsoft looks at that and say, we already have these systems like locked in, and so we just need to like build the story around it. I wonder if it's a relatively, I guess, cheap game to put out and be successful.
All right, so for me, Mass Effect, of course, Horizon as well, Red Dead, yes. Some other ones that you guys didn't mention, Persona 5, very excited about it. As I've said many times on this show, Persona is a very special series, which I got into with the fourth one. So it's not like I'm an old school Persona fan, but it really had a very specific atmosphere to the game, which I'm looking forward to getting more of in the fifth one. Tekken 7, which, again, I'm really excited about it. I'm a fighting game fan, and I sort of had forgotten about Tekken 7, which has been out in the arcades in Japan mainly for a long time, but it is coming for the PlayStation 4, I think for all consoles. So that's going to be awesome. And I know it's going to be awesome because I've played it already, so I know the game is fun. And I forgot in the French version of my gaming show, I forgot to mention Destiny. I can't believe I forgot Destiny 2. I was listening to another podcast when they mentioned Destiny, and I was like, how did I forget this? As you guys know, Destiny 1 was my life for a very long time. the Taken King was a wonder of a revamp of a game. And Destiny 2, I'm hoping, is going, as you know, the Iron whatever this year was a tiny thing and didn't really get me into it, but I'm hoping Destiny 2 is going to bring the marvelous elements of Destiny to a wider public by making it more less of a narrow slice of gameplay than it is now. So we'll see how that works out. And then
I agree, and then also I wish I liked Destiny more, so maybe Destiny 2 will be it for me.
I hope it's more open worldy. I guess
it's Diablo. It's Diablo as an FPS.
I know.
I could play. If you said to me right now, "Hey Scott, what do you want to go play? You only can do two things: Destiny or Diablo." I go play Diablo.
Yeah, no, I know, because you're a Diablo nut, but All right, some games that might come out in 2017, but probably not. And also, I want to see more about them before I decide if I'm really excited about them. God of War, I think I'm sort of kidding myself. I'm very excited about it, but we've seen 10 minutes of it, so it's kind of hard to objectively say it's one of my most anticipated games of 2017, especially since it might not come out in 2017, probably won't. Days Gone, same thing. And Detroit, Becoming Human, Being Human, whatever, is also very intriguing.
Become Human.
Become Human. All right, there you go. And Days Gone, I mean, oh my God, that E3 demo. But it's really that. It's just a demo. And also, I think the Last of Us feel of it might be a great way of getting that Last of Us-ish fix of a very specific type of post-apocalyptic setting before the Last of Us Part 2 finally comes out. So, I don't know. I think Days Gone might benefit from that as well for me.
Days Gone felt more like Dead Rising without all the silliness than it did Last of Us for me.
Yeah. It did. Which I might be okay with.
But Yeah.
No, I agree. But it did in the action scenes, right? In the very frantic gameplay moments, it did that. But in the walking around and, you know, the guitar and the colors and the desolation.
Style of it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was a little bit more The Last of Us. It was really like, you know, in the forest and you're just walking around and you can hear Santa Lala's guitar almost in the background. It's like The Last of Us conditioning. And maybe I should just go and play The Last of Us again. Won't be the first time. And finally, the Switch, of course, you know, that's highly anticipated, and we'll know more in a week. So please, as they would say in a Nintendo video, please look forward to it. We'll be covering it in the next episode, and I hope you join us again at that point, because there will be a lot to say, I'm sure. Anything else you guys want to add for 2016 or 2017 before we close off the show and go do the instance?
Good year last year, for a year that was filled with lots of other weirdness, games didn't seem to be affected. It seemed like a really banner year, so I'm excited for 2017 in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think this is the year, and I almost would have given it last year, but this is the year where I have a greater list of games that I wish I had time to play during the year than any previous year. And as my stockpile keeps getting bigger and bigger of games that I own and haven't played yet, that's just not a good sign for me. It's going to be a problem.
And imagine, we are people who basically do this for a living. I mean, there's a lot of stuff we have to do, but how do you dedicate enough time to play all the games you want to play? I guess no one can.
It's an embarrassment of riches. Like, we've never had a world like this where every day there's something new on a platform for me to play somewhere. Like, every freaking day. And that's just, it's insane. Like, it used to be, there's one game every 2 months I care about.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there is something to be said about the fact that, like, Steam and like even PlayStation and Xbox to a certain extent don't really have as much curation as they used to. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of crap that shows up on those platforms. And it's really hard to separate the wheat from the chaff sometimes. So I wonder if 2017 will be the year of like more curated experiences in these stores, kind of using like machine learning and stuff like that we've talked about on other podcasts and stuff like that.
The stores definitely could use some work, the UI and the recommendation system. Even talking about crap and wheat and chaff, even I'm getting videos, ads on YouTube now for mobile games that they're doing. I don't know if you're getting those ads, but it's basically a portion of the game with a character walking around at level 1, and then they show you level 10 and they show you level 50. And they gain in power, and the character is more, you know, cooler, looks cooler, has more flames and skulls and whatever. And I'm like, I feel bad about it, but I kind of want to go and try it. It's like, even there, I'm like tickled by the thing they're doing. So, too many games.
It's a crazy time. It's so different than it used to be. People, we just don't realize it because it happened kind of slowly and over time. Mm-hmm. But we can have these experiences within minutes of downloading them on multiple platforms, on the go, at home, in multiple places, cross saves. Like, it's just this gamut of AAA down to some weird mobile thing that you end up being addicted to. And it's just never been like this. It's just insane.
Ah, well, more of that waiting for you in 2017, I'm sure. And to help everyone enjoy it, you will be able to follow Scott at those places.
That's right. Follow me on Twitter, at Scott Johnson. You can find pretty much everything going on there. Frogpants.com for all the shows and the art and stuff. And yeah, a lot of stuff planned for this year. So follow me and find out more.
Excellent. Ed, what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Adesis. We stream every night over at 4pp.tv. And keep an eye out on 4playernetwork.com for the upcoming Game of the Year videos. And I think next week we're doing our Game of the Year big podcast. I'm not actually on it, but I do a lot of things in the background. But keep an eye out on the website for my top 10 games of the year for 2016.
Excellent. Nice. As for me, I'm not Patrick on Twitter and Facebook, and you can find this show at frenchspin.com along with the Phileas Club, which will also help us get through 2017 in a more, how can I say it, a more open and a positive way, let's put it like that. So if you want that kind of atmosphere, you can go to frenchspin.com and get the comments for this show and the other one. And of course, the Instance, Overwatchers, Daily Tech News Show, all of those will be there as well in 2017. I'm looking forward to being part of your everyday lives in all of those ways for the whole year. So have an excellent few weeks, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with the Switch details. Woohoo! Talk to you then.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.